This is All of It. I'm Kusha Navadar, filling in for Allison Stewart. Welcome back. The NAACP Image Awards are this week. The televised awards ceremony will be held this Saturday. So today, we're bringing you recent conversations we've had on the show with some of the winners and nominees. So let's get back into it with a look at the documentary film Invisible Beauty, which reflects on the contributions of fashion trailblazer Bethann Hardison and her fight for black models. It won an NAACP Image Award for Outstanding Documentary this Wednesday. Here's Allison's conversation with Hardison, who co-directed the film alongside Frederick Chang.
So, Bethann, what is one of your earliest memories of fashion or style? Something or someone you saw and you just knew that style?
Oh, that's the neighborhood. I grew up in Bedford-Stuyvesant. And I think that, seeing the men on the corners talking stuff, looking at their double pleated pants, wingtip shoes, their shirts, no matter what it was, everybody looks kind of cool. And when they didn't, they were a lot of fun. It was just a great moment. And I think a lot of the culture, just basically, whether it be what you wear or how you act, was style to me.
Frederick, you have known Bethann prior to this film. What is an aspect of her career in the industry that you knew you wanted to cover?
Well, I think the activism is really something that interested me a lot. I was looking at Bethann as like this incredible leader in the industry who really made a mark on literally how the fashion world looks today, in terms of diversity and the models of color really getting their dues. So I think that was a big part. And when I realized that Bethann had documented a lot of the town hall meetings that she held, in 2008, 2007, that's incredible footage. That's historical footage that, nobody's seen and that people need to know, because a lot of people have forgotten that chapter in the history of fashion.
Bethann, why did you want to co-direct the film? And was there any moment that you as a co-director and you as the subject had differing opinions?
Well, the good news is that Frederick, said he wouldn't do the film unless I co-directed. So that was a gift and a little bit of a pressure. But I took it like, well said and well done, Frederick, because I felt much more comfortable if I had someone that was a lead horse to make the film with me. And I'm just glad he wanted to make the film. I never at any given point had a time where I felt any difficulty with him either, because he's so much the audience. He's so hungry for the information I'm giving for who I am, that it made it very much, much easier for me to allow him to come into my life, because he was like a fly on the wall.
Frederick, we hear a lot from Bethann. We get to see her in action, see her do her thing. But who else's voice did you know you needed to have in this film to tell a complete story?
Well, we needed everyone's voice, because Bethann has had an impact on so many people. Really, that was one of the challenges, is like who to include. And we knew we couldn't have hundreds of people. But it's literally, Bethann's life has been like a chorus of voices just telling us how much of an impact she's had on them. And so it goes from like Zendaya to, Naomi Campbell, Iman, the young designers that she's mentoring right now, and everyone. I mean, it's like, that's what Bethann does. She's been an incredible mentor to the industry.
Well, let's listen to a clip from the film Invisible Beauty. This is Iman, Somali-American model, people know Iman, reminiscing about one of the first encounters she had with Bethann Hardison. This is from Invisible Beauty.
There were a lot of American black models who were not given the opportunity. And here was somebody that they had to import, bring it from another country. Stephen Burrows asked if I would come to do his show. So I get there. And everybody had this idea that I didn't speak a word of English. Bethann was there. She gave me a dress and heels. And for the life of me, I could not put the heels on. And she got on her knees and helped me to put it on. And the whole room went against her. And they said, she also is supposed to be royalty. Don't get on your knees, because this is what she'll be expecting that everybody will do for her. And Beth Ann didn't pay any attention to them. And she looked up at me and she said, "You understand everything they're saying, don't you?" And I said, "Yes," in English. But it was, to me, she was like the Statue of Liberty, the first person who said to me, "Welcome to America."
Beth Ann, what is something that people don't understand about the life of a model that maybe you hope they understand a little better after seeing this film?
You know, the interesting thing, Allison, is that the film is not really a fashion film. It's fashion related, yes. It tells a story, a part of my life that, you know, of where I made some effect that mm-hmm. really helped to change the industry of I think the industry of fashion models as well as the industry of fashion. And I think that a lot of times we don't know how hard models have it in general, whether they be Black, white, Asian, Puerto Rican, or Latino, no matter what it is, the difficulty, it's not an easy job to have. And I think at certain times, it just changes, the industry changes. So at some point, you know, you might have had an easier time. Like when I was a runway model, it was easy because all the girls of color and anybody, white or anyone, was just having a good time with the fashion designers. But then the industry changed. And once it changed, other things start to come into play. So it becomes a little bit more difficult sometimes when the Eastern European girls start to come into the industry. Then, of course, the girls of color or even the glamorous girls, the supermodels weren't asked to be part of it anymore. They were sort of like suppressed. There was no longer saw them. So some of the things I think that we need to understand is that mm-hmm. how hard for a model it is to work and to have stamina about what you're doing.
And Frederick, I want you to, this was really interesting, something I didn't put it together. How geopolitics affected fashion and affected Black models. There's a moment in the film when someone describes why and how the runway suddenly became full of white models, just to be blunt. Mm-hmm. Would you explain that, Frederick?
Yes, I love how Beth Ann phrases it in the film. You know, she says, like, "Do you want to know why everything changed?" And I said, "Yes." And she says, "Because the Berlin Wall fell." And what happened is that the Soviet bloc opened up, you know, in the late 80s or early 90s. And suddenly you had all these Eastern European and Russian models that were very eager to work. And it was a new aesthetic. And some in the fashion world just latched onto this new aesthetic and wanted just a coat hanger. That's what Beth Ann was referring to. The glamour was gone and it was all about uniformity. And Kim Hassreiter in the film says it was almost like fascist uniformity. You know, it was like a new look. And it lasted for too many years for, you know, no one to say anything. Mm-hmm. And that person to say something was Beth Ann. She really came and had that difficult conversation with the fashion industry.
And to catch people up, there was a very direct open letter that you and several of the other folks in the industry signed. You held this press conference / town hall sort of come to Jesus moment with everybody in the fashion industry. I want to play a clip from this. In this clip, you'll hear from Naomi Campbell, then Iman, then Beth Ann, and then a sort of cranky fashion agent. This is part of this town hall that was held to address the idea of representation, lack of representation in the fashion industry. Let's take a listen.
So I've been extremely lucky and blessed in my generation of girls with Cindy, Linda, Christy. Mm-hmm. Christy used to say to Dolce & Gabbana or Helmut Lang, "If you don't use Naomi, you don't get us." So my girls stuck up for me. So that's how I got into Dolce & Gabbana, Helmut Lang, Prada.
They were a true posse.
This is a huge industry that has no union. Models don't have a union. They don't have a voice. Nobody speaks for them.
The fact of it is we have to say, where does it start? Does it start with model agents? The model agent says, "Well, you don't understand what it's like. You know how hard it is to get."
I think a model agent has to talk now.
I'm going to. I'm going to get you. You. What do you think I'm doing?
I think it's.
You know. No. I'm setting you up, babe. Okay. I'm going for it.
That is Beth Ann Hardison. What was something that came out of that day, Beth Ann?
Well, one thing, you know, they would always say, all the casting directors would say to the model agencies, "No Blacks, no ethnics. We're not seeing Black girls this season." And so the model agencies were sort of like hands were tied. You know, they just, what could they do? They could only tell the people that they represented. There was only a few in each agency. I'm sorry. And it was hard for the model agencies to also go out and look for more girls of color, any color. because the industry was already saying quite often, no, no, no. So it gave the model agencies a little bit more of a difficulty in saying to others, let me just find someone else different for you, because they were already saying no blacks, no ethnics. Well, after that town hall meeting in September 2007, I had the press there. I had many people. Once it hit the press and all, it was never said again, ever again in the history of time. Since 2007, did they no longer say no blacks, no ethnics. Now, they might have performed it, but they didn't say it.
What did?
And I want to say one other thing. Mm-hmm. I want to say one other thing else. Just to be clear, the letter that went out wasn't signed by anyone but me. I was the only one who wrote it. I just had a backup band.
That's right. That's a good way to put it. Frederick, whose career was made by Beth Ann? We'll talk about her like she's not here.
Well, so many people, but I think one person in particular is Tyson Beckford. You know, like Tyson Beckford blew up and he became this superstar. And it was kind of amazing to see the archival footage of people, the mobs that were waiting for him at the malls, you know, everywhere he went. And he became, you know, the face of Ralph Lauren for several years. And Beth Ann got him a contract, which was really hard to get. And it was like unprecedented. And, you know, to this day, like Tyson was in New York last weekend. He was celebrating with us the release of the film in New York. And it's incredible. He spoke during the Q&A and he's like so grateful. And so, you know, his interview was very emotional because he owes a huge part of his life to Beth Ann.
And Beth Ann, it was really moving to me because the idea that Tyson would be the all-American young man in the all-American clothing, I think that was really, I mean, it was radical.
Yeah.
And needed.
And it came along at And it came along at the right time, too, because, you know, the B-boy was happening. Hip-hop was happening. It, you know, it had a great audience out there, and not even trying for Ralph at that moment. It was just serendipitous. Everything came together in such an interesting way. You know, many people think this was the first black that Ralph ever. No, Ralph had actually booked black models before. It's just that at this moment in time, him putting that red hoodie with the P-O-L-O letters in front and his advertising campaign focus on Tyson, that just changed the game.
We're talking about the film Invisible Beauty. My guests are Beth Ann Hardison and Frederick Chang. Beth Ann, your son, for my generation, we all know him from a different world, Kadeem Hardison, and he's one of the voices in the film. And you're very candid about, you know, parts times your relationship was fraught with your son, and it's difficult to balance being a mom and having this big a career as you had. When you look back on your career and motherhood, what's something you think you did really well, and what's something that if you could change it, you would?
Well, it's good that you asked this, Alice, and I'm so pleased that you did, because it was never, I guess the word fraught sort of like throws me a curveball in a way, because it wasn't, I mean, but many people think that. So they, because when they watch the film, the way it's told, it's just that he just drops out, you know, he just disappears and you just don't hear from him for a long period of time. I don't know if there's anything else I could have done. I had my son when I was quite young, and I, you know, I just didn't want to, you know, fail at anything. I was trying, you know, once I said, okay, come on, we got to come live. He would live with me until he was three. And then he went to live with his grandmother. I think it was just time that you just do the best you can. I don't know what we all could do better, but I was determined to give him something to do while I had something to do. Mm-hmm. So that's why I suggested that he become an actor, because I know he loved Starsky and Hutch back in the day. And he would stay and look at all TV all the time when he had it. And so I can, you know, convince him that he could consider that. And when he did I had him actually do like a little bit of a monologue mm-hmm. at home. And he did it so well that I said, okay, you should consider being an actor. So now when people say, what do you want to be? You say, I want to be an actor. But he is a good actor. He wind up going off to, you know, coming to live with me and going off to classes and studying in school and getting an agent and going off very fast at the age of 14 years old. He did his first film on PBS and he just went on. But it's really wonderful, the life. But I think it's very interesting when you're a parent, and many people watching this film, especially new to Q&As, I've had women talk to me about mm-hmm. that, them being a professional woman and having a child, and a male child too, and the difficulty it is for them in that same sense. I think in a lot of ways, you just do the best you can. I mean, I was a good mom. He says I am. He says tell the world I was a great mother. But in the end of the day, you know, it's not an easy journey when you're out there doing it by yourself.
And somebody actually tweeted in, they wanted to know about the status of your relationship.
That's the funny thing about it. We're always cool. Mm. It's just that he disappears. And that for me, as a mother who likes him so much, the guy is so funny. We have such a good time. So when Kadeem just doesn't call back or doesn't speak, it's just a missing. So yeah, we're good. We're always good. Thank you for asking.
Sure, of course. Frederick, you've done several documentaries about the fashion world and the fashion industry. You know it. What was something you learned about this industry working on this film that maybe you didn't really know or understand fully before?
Well, I mean, I learned so much. I mean, for me, this is the most kind of meaningful film that I've done for myself as a human being. You know, it was like such a journey just getting to know Bethann and her story and just getting to be so close to her by co-directing. So it's totally different. I see it as like another facet of the fashion world. And again, like, this is not a fashion film per se, like Bethann says it, because I'm not really interested in fashion per se. You know, I'm interested in the humans of fashion, and Bethann is like such a an inspiring human, you know. And for me, the film has much more to do about, you know, civil rights, woman's story. It has so many different layers to it, and fashion is just one of them.
And Bethann, do you still enjoy going to see the shows?
And no.
Did you see, you don't? Oh, did you see anything you liked?
Yes, I had to go for Gucci because I work with Gucci. And I loved, and I'm very happy that I was able to go. I really am. And it was quick. But I don't mind me, everyone, because everyone knows me and everyone knows. I grew up in the garment business and I grew up through all of this. I like certain designer shows, but they all are good. I love watching them on video now. Mm-hmm. I don't need to go to a show. Now I'm not going to get invited to anything. You see, I just made a mistake there. But
no, they want you in the row. They want you in the front row. They want the.
But I did go. I had to go see Gucci because I work with Gucci, and I really, it's a new cast, new creative director. So it was very, very, very a lot of pressure and a lot of, you know, expectation. And so it was wonderful to see. And I was happy to say that I did like it. He's on a journey. I understand he had to take over something that's quite different than was before. But I appreciate what he did.
The documentary is called Invisible Beauty. That was Allison's conversation with directors Bethann Hardison and Frederick Chang. Up next, poet Kwame Alexander wrote a memoir that isn't a typical building block story. There are poems, recipes, and letters to his family members. He joined Allison to talk about the book, which was nominated for Outstanding Literary Work. You come to the New Yorker Radio Hour for conversations that go deeper with people you really want to hear from, whether it's Bruce Springsteen or Questlove or Olivia Rodrigo, Liz Cheney, or the godfather of artificial intelligence, Geoffrey Hinton, or some of my extraordinarily well-informed colleagues at The New Yorker. So join us every week on The New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.